Cherie Littlebottom strode into the palace kitchens and fired her crossbow into the ceiling. "Don't nobody move!" she yelled. The patrician's domestic staff looked up from their dinner.
"When you say, don't nobody move," said Drumknot carefully,
fastidiously taking a piece of plaster off his plate,
"do you, in fact, mean..."
"All right, Corporal, I'll take over now," said Vimes, patting Cherie on the shoulder. "Is Mildred Easy here?"
All heads turned. Mildred's spoon dropped into her soup.
"It's all right," said Vimes. "I just need to ask you a few more questions."
"I'm sorry, sir."
"You haven't done anything wrong," said Vimes, walking around the table, "but you didn't just take food home for your family, did you?"
"Sir?"
"What else did you take?"
Mildred looked at the suddenly blank expressions on the faces of the other servants.
"There was the old sheets, but Mrs. Diblock did say I could have..."
"No, not that," said Vimes.
Mildred licked her dry lips.
There was some boot polish."
"Look," said Vimes, as kindly as possible. "Everyone takes small things from the place where they work. Small stuff that no one notices. No one thinks of it as stealing. It's like rights. Odds and ends. Ends, Miss Easy. I'm thinking about the word ends."
You mean candle ends, sir?"
Vimes took a deep breath. It was such a relief to be right, even though you knew you'd only got there by trying every possible way to be wrong.
"Ah," he said.
"But that's not stealing, sir. I've never stolen nothing, sir."
"But you take home the candle stubs. Still half an hour of light in them, I expect, if you burn them in a saucer," said Vimes gently.
"But that's not stealing, sir. That's perks, sir."
Sam Vimes smacked his forehead.
"Perks, of course. That was the word I was looking for. Perks. Everyone's got to have perks, aren't I right? Well, that's fine, then," he said. "I expect you get the ones from the bedrooms, yes?"
Even through her nervousness, Mildred Easy was able to grin the grin of someone with an entitlement that lesser beings hadn't got.
"Yes, sir. I'm allowed, sir. They're much better than the old coarse ones we use in the main hall, sir."
"And you put in fresh candles when necessary, do you?"
"Yes, sir."
"Probably slightly more often than necessary," Vimes thought. "No point in letting them burn down too much." "Perhaps you can show me where they're kept, miss."
The maid looked along the table to the housekeeper, who glanced at Commander Vimes and then nodded. She was bright enough to know when something that sounded like a question really wasn't one.
"We keep them in the candle pantry next door, sir," said Mildred.
"Lead the way, please."
It wasn't a big room, but its shelves were stacked floor to ceiling with candles. There were the yard-high ones used in the public halls, and the small everyday ones used everywhere else, sorted according to quality.
"These are what we uses in his lordship's rooms, sir."
She handed him 12 inches of white candle.
"Oh, yes. Very good quality. Number 5s. Nice white tallow," said Vimes, tossing it up and down. "We burn these at home. The stuff we use at the yard is damn near pork dripping. We get ours from Carrie's in the Shambles now. Very reasonable prices. We used to deal with Spadger and Williams, but Mr. Carrie's really cornered the market these days, hasn't he?"
"Yes, sir, and he delivers them special, sir."
"And you put these candles in his lordship's room every day?"
"Yes, sir."
"Anywhere else?"
"Oh, no, sir, his lordship's particular about that. We just use number 3s.
"And you take your perks home?"
"Yes, sir. Gran said they gave a lovely light, sir."
"I expect she sat up with your little brother, did she? Because I expect he got took sick first, so she sat up with him all night long, night after night, and if I know old Mrs. Easy, she did her sewing."
"Yes, sir."
There was a pause. "Use my handkerchief," said Vimes after a while.
"Am I going to lose my position, sir?"
"No, that's definite. No one involved deserves to lose their jobs," said Vimes. He looked at the candle. "Except possibly me," he added.
He stopped at the doorway and turned.
"And if you ever want candle ends, we've always got lots at the watch house. Nobby'll have to start buying cooking fat like everybody else." "What's it doing now?" said Sergeant Colan. Wee Mad Arthur peered over the edge of the roof again. "It's having problems with its elbows," he said conversationally. "It keeps looking at one of them and trying it all the ways up, and it's not working."
"I had that trouble when I put up them kitchen units for Mrs. Colan," said the sergeant. "The instructions on how to open the box were inside the box." "Uh-oh, it's worked it out," said the rat-catcher. "Looks like it had it mixed up with its knees, after all." Colon heard a clank below him. "And now it's gone round the corner." There was a crash of splintering wood. "And now it's got into the building. I expect it'll come up the stairs. But it looks like you'll be okay." "Why?" "'Cause all you got to do is let go of the roof, see?" "I'll drop to my death." "Right. Nice, clean way to go. None of that arms and legs being ripped off stuff first." "I wanted to buy a farm," moaned Colon. "Could be," said Arthur. He looked over the roof again. "Or," he said, as if this were hardly a better option, "you could try to grab the drain pipe." Colon looked sideways. There was a pipe a few feet away. If he swung his body and really made an effort, he might just miss it by inches and plunge to his death. "Does it look safe?" he said. "Compared with what, mister?" Colon tried to swing his legs like a pendulum. Every muscle in his arm screamed at him. He knew he was overweight. He'd always meant to take exercise one day. He just hadn't been aware that it was going to be today. "I reckon I can hear it walking up the stairs," said wee mad Arthur. Colon tried to swing faster. "What are you going to do?" he said. "Oh, don't you worry about me," said wee mad Arthur. "I'll be fine. I'll jump." "Jump? Sure, I'll be safe because I've been normal-sized, see?"
"You think that you're normal-sized?"
Wee Mad Arthur looked at Colon's hands.
"Are these your fingers right here by my boots?" he said.
"Right, right. You're normal-sized. It's not your fault you've moved into a city full of giants," said Colon.
"Right. The smaller you are, the lighter you'll fall. Well-known fact. A spider'll not even notice a drop like this. A mouse'd walk away. A horse'd break every bone in its body, and a elephant'd splat—"
"Oh, gods!"
muttered Colon. He could feel the drainpipe with his boot now. But getting a grip would mean that there would have to be one long, bottomless moment when he was not exactly holding onto the roof, and not exactly holding onto the drainpipe, and in very serious peril of holding onto the ground. There was another crash from somewhere on the roof.
"Right," said wee mad Arthur. "See yous at the bottom."
"Oh, gods!"
The gnome stepped off the roof.
"All okay so far?"
he shouted as he went past Colon.
"Oh, gods!"
Sergeant Colon looked up into the two red glows.
"Doing fine up to now," said a Dopplering voice from below. "Oh, gods!"
Colon heaved his legs around, stood on fresh air for a moment, grabbed the top of the pipe, ducked his head as a pottery fist swung at him, heard the nasty little noise as the pipe's rusty bolts said goodbye to the wall, and still clinging to a tilting length of cast-iron pipe, as if it were going to help, disappeared backwards into the fog. Mr. Sock looked up at the sound of the door opening, and then cowered back against the sausage machine.
"You!" he whispered. "You can't come back. I sold you."
Dorful regarded him steadily for a few seconds, and then walked past him and took the largest cleaver from the blood-stained rack on the wall. Sock began to shake.
"I was always good to you," he said. "Always let you have your holy days off."
Dorful stared at him again. "It's only red light," Sock gibbered to himself, but it seemed more focused. He felt it entering his head through his own eyes and examining his soul. The golem pushed him aside and stepped out of the slaughterhouse and towards the cattle pens. Sock unfroze. They never fought back, did they? They couldn't. It was how the damn things were made. He stared around at the other workers, humans and trolls alike.
"Don't just stand there! Get it!"
One or two hesitated. It was a big cleaver in the golem's hand, and when Dorful stopped to look around at them, there was something different about the golem's stance, too. It didn't look like something that wouldn't fight back. But Sock didn't employ people for the muscles in their heads. Besides, no one had really liked a golem around the place. A troll aimed a poleaxe at him. Dorful caught it, one-handed, without turning his head, and snapped the hickory handle with his fingers. A man with a hammer had it plucked from his hand and thrown so hard at the wall that it left a hole. After that, they followed at a cautious distance. Dorful took no further notice of them. The steam over the cattle pens mingled with the fog. Hundreds of dark eyes watched Dorful curiously as he walked between the fences. They were always quiet when the golem was around. He stopped by one of the largest pens. There were voices from behind.
"Don't tell me it's going to slaughter the lot of them. We'll never get that lot jointed this shift."
"I heard where there was one at a carpenter's that went odd and made 5,000 tables in one night. Lost count or something."
"It was just staring at them."
"I mean 5,000 tables. One of them had 27 legs.
It got stuck on legs."
Dorfel brought the cleaver down hard and sliced the lock off the gate. The cattle watched the golem with that guarded expression which cattle have that means they're waiting for the next thought to turn up. He walked onto the sheep pens and opened them too. The pigs were next, and then the poultry.
"All of them?" said Mr. Sock.
The golem walked calmly back down the line of pens, ignoring the watchers, and re-entered the slaughterhouse. He came out very shortly afterwards, leading the ancient and hairy billy goat on a piece of string. He went past the waiting animals until he reached the wide gates that led onto the main road, which he opened. Then he let the goat loose. The animal sniffed the air and rolled its slotted eyes, then, apparently deciding that the distant odour of the cabbage fields beyond the city wall was much preferable to the smells immediately around it, it trotted away up the road. The animals followed it in a rush, but with hardly any other noise than the rustle of movement and the sounds of their hooves. They streamed around the stationary figure of Dorfel, who stood and watched them go. A chicken, bewildered by the stampede, landed on the golem's head and started to cluck. Anger finally overcame Sock's terror.
"What the hell are you doing?"
he shouted to a field of a few stray sheep as they bolted out of the pens.
"That's money walking out of the gate, you—"
Dorfel's hand was suddenly around his throat. The golem picked him up and held the struggling man at arm's length, turning his head this way and that as if considering his next course of action. Finally, he tossed away the cleaver, reached up under the chicken that had taken up residence, and produced a small brown egg. With apparent ceremony, the golem smashed it, carefully, on Sock's scalp, and dropped him. The golem's former co-workers jumped back out of the way as Dorfel walked back through the slaughterhouse. There was a tally board on the entrance. Dorfel looked at it for a while, then picked up the chalk and wrote,
"No, master."
The chalk crumbled in his fingers. Dorfel walked out into the fog. Cherie looked up from her workbench.
"The wick's full of arsenous acid," she said. "Well done, sir. This candle even weighs slightly more than other candles."
"What an evil way to kill anyone," said Angua.
"Certainly very clever," said Vimes. "Vetinari sits up half the night writing, and in the morning the candle's burned down. Poisoned by the light. The light's something you don't see. Who looks at the light? Not some plodding old copper."
"Oh, you're not that old, sir," said Carrot cheerfully.
"What about plodding?"
"Or that plodding either," Carrot added quickly. "I've always pointed out to people that you walk in a very purposeful and meaningful manner." Vimes gave him a sharp look and saw nothing more than a keen and innocently helpful expression.
"We don't look at the light, because the light is what we look with," said Vimes. "Okay, and now I think we should go and have a look at the candle factory, shouldn't we? You come, Little Bottom, and bring your... Have you got taller, Little Bottom?"
"High-heel boots, sir," said Cherie.
"I thought dwarfs always wore iron boots."
"Yes, sir, but I've got high heels on mine, sir. I welded them on."
"Oh, fine, right." Vimes pulled himself together. "Well, if you could still totter, bring your alchemy stuff with you. Detritus should have come off duty from the palace. When it comes to locked doors, you can't beat Detritus. He's a walking crowbar. We'll pick him up on the way."
He loaded his crossbow and lit a match.
"Right," he said. "We've done it the modern way. Now let's try policing like Grandfather used to do it. It's time to—"
"Prod buttock, sir," said Carrot hurriedly.
"Close," said Vimes, taking a deep drag and blowing out a smoke ring. "But no cigar."
Sergeant Colon's view of the world was certainly changing. Just when something was about to fix itself firmly in his mind as the worst moment of his entire life, it was hurriedly replaced by something even nastier. Firstly, the drainpipe he was riding hit the wall of the building opposite. In a well-organized world, he might have landed on a fire escape, but fire escapes were unknown in Ankh-Morpork, and the flames generally had to leave via the roof. With the pipe thus leaning against the wall, he found himself sliding down the diagonal. Even this might have been a happy outcome, were it not for the fact that Colon was a heavy man, and as his weight slid nearer to the middle of the unsupported pipe, the pipe sagged. And cast iron has only a very limited amount of sag before it snaps, which it now did. Colon dropped, and landed on something soft, at least softer than the street, and the something went... He bounced off it, and landed on something lower and softer, which went... and rolled from this onto something even lower and apparently made of feathers, which went insane and pecked him. The street was full of animals, milling around uncertainly. When animals are in a state of uncertainty, they get nervous, and the street was already, as it were, paved with anxiety. The only benefit to Sergeant Colon was that this made it slightly softer than would otherwise have been the case.
Hooves trod on his hands. Very large, dribbly noses sneezed at him. Sergeant Colan had not hitherto had a great deal of experience of animals, except in portion sizes. When he'd been little, he'd had a pink stuffed pig called Mr. Dreadful, and he'd got up to Chapter 6 in Animal Husbandry. It had woodcuts in it. There was no mention of hot, smelly breath and great clomping feet like soup plates on a stick. Cows in Sergeant Colan's book should go moo. Every child knew that. They shouldn't go boo like some kind of undersea monster and spray you with spit. He tried to get up, skidded on some cow's moment of crisis, and sat down on a sheep. It went blah. What kind of noise was that for a sheep to make? He got up again and tried to make his way back to the curb. Shoo! Get out of the damn way, you sheep! Gone! A goose hissed at him and stuck out altogether too much neck. Colan backed off and stopped when something nudged him in the back. It was a pig. It was no Mr. Dreadful. This wasn't the little piggy that went to market, or the little piggy that stayed at home. It would be quite hard to imagine what kind of foot would have a piggy like this, but it would probably be the kind that also had hair and scales and toenails like cashew nuts. This piggy was the size of a pony. This piggy had tusks, and it wasn't pink. It was a blue-black colour and covered with sharp hair, but it did have, let's be fair, thought Colan, little red piggy eyes. This little piggy looked like the little piggy that killed the boarhounds, disemboweled the horse, and ate the huntsman. Colan turned around and came face to face with a bull-like beef cube on legs. It turned its huge head from side to side so that each rolling eye could get a sight of the sergeant. But it was clear that neither of them liked him very much. It lowered its head. There wasn't room for it to charge, but it could certainly push. As the animals crowded around him, Colan took the only way of escape possible. There were men slumped all over the alley. "Hello, hello, hello, what's all this, then?" said Carrot. A man who was holding his arm and groaning looked up at him.
"We were viciously attacked."
"We don't have time for this," said Vimes.
"We may have," said Angua.
She tapped him on the shoulder and pointed to the wall opposite, on which was written in a familiar script,
"No, Master."
Carrot hunched down and spoke to the casualty.
"You were attacked by a golem, were you?" he said.
"Right. Vicious bugger. Just walked out of the fog and went for us. You know what they're like."
Carrot gave the man a cheerful smile. Then his gaze travelled along the man's body to the big hammer lying in the gutter, and moved from that to the other tools strewn around the scene of the fight. Several had their handles broken. There was a long crowbar bent nearly into a circle.
"It's lucky you were all so well armed," he said.
"It turned on us," said the man. He tried to snap his fingers. "Just like that. Oh! Ah!"
"You seem to have hurt your fingers."
"You're right."
"It's just that I don't understand how it could have turned on you and just walked out of the fog," said Carrot.
"Everyone knows they're not allowed to fight back."
"Fight back?" Carrot repeated.
"It's not right, them walking around the streets like that,"
the man muttered, looking away. There was the sound of running feet behind them, and a couple of men in blood-stained aprons caught up with them.
"It went that way!" one yelled. "You'll be able to catch up with it if you hurry!"
"Come on, don't hang around. What do we pay our taxes for?" said the other.
"It went all round the cattle yards and let everything out. Everything! You can't move on Pigsty Hill!"
"A golem let all the cattle out?" said Vimes. "What for?"
"How should I know? It took the Eudes goat out of Sock's slaughterhouse, so half the damn things are following it around. And then it went and put old Fosdyke in his sausage machine."
"What?"
"Oh, it didn't turn the handle. It just shoved a handful of parsley in his mouth, dropped an onion down his trousers, covered him in oatmeal, and dropped him in the upper."
Angua's shoulders started to shake. Even Vimes grinned.
"And then it went into the poultry merchants, grabbed Mr. Turwilly, and..."
The man stopped, aware there was a lady present, even if she was making snorting noises while trying not to laugh, and continued in a mumble.
"Made use of some sage and onion, if you know what I mean."
"You mean he..."
Vimes began.
"Yes."
His companion nodded.
"Poor old Turwilly won't be able to look sage and onion in the face again, I reckon."
"By the sound of it, that's the last thing he'll do," said Vimes.
Angua had to turn her back.
"Tell him about what happened in your pork butchers," said the man's companion.
"I don't think you'll need to," said Vimes. "I'm seeing a pattern here. Right, and poor young Sid's only an apprentice and didn't deserve what it done to him. Oh, dear, said Carrot. I think I've got an ointment that might be...
Will it help with the apple? The man demanded.
He'd shoved an apple in his mouth.
Wrong.
Vimes winced. Ouch.
What's going to be done, eh?
Said the butcher, his face a few inches from Vimes's. Well, if you can get a grip on the stem...
I'm serious. What are you going to do? I'm a taxpayer and I know my rights.
He prodded Vimes in the breastplate. Vimes's expression went wooden. He looked down at the finger, and then back up at the man's large red nose.
In that case, said Vimes, I suggest you take another apple, and,
Excuse me, said Carrot loudly, you're Mr. Maxilot, aren't you? Got a shop in the shambles?
Yes, that's right, what of it?
It's just that I don't recall seeing your name on the register of taxpayers, which is very odd because you said you were a taxpayer, but of course you wouldn't lie about a thing like that, and anyway, when you paid your taxes, they would have given you a receipt, because that's the law. And I'm sure you'd be able to find it if you looked.
The butcher lowered his finger.
Yes.
I could come and help you if you'd like, said Carrot.
The butcher gave Vimes a despairing look.
"'He really does read that stuff,' said Vimes. "'For pleasure. "'Carrot, why don't you scop?'
"'My gods, what the hell is that?' "'There was a bellow further up the street. "'Something big and muddy was approaching at a sort of menacing amble. "'In the gloom it looked vaguely like a very fat centaur, "'half man, half... "'In fact it was, he realised as it bounced nearer, "'half colon, half bull.' Sergeant Colon had lost his helmet and had a certain look about him that suggested he had been close to the soil. As the massive bull cantered past, the sergeant rolled his eyes wildly and said,
"'I daren't get off! I daren't get off!'
"'How did you get on?' shouted Vimes.
"'It wasn't easy, sir. I just grabbed the orange, sir. Next minute I was on its back.'
"'Well, hang on!'
"'Yes, sir! Hanging on, sir!'
Rogers, the bulls, were angry and bewildered, which counts as the basic state of mind for full-grown bulls. Because of the huge, obtrusive mass of his forehead, Rogers, the bull's view of the universe was from two eyes each with their own non-overlapping hemispherical view of the world. Since there were two separate visions, Rogers had reasoned, that meant there must be two bulls, bulls not having been bred for much deductive reasoning. Most bulls believe this, which is why they always keep turning their head this way and that when they look at you. They do this because both of them want to see. But they had a particular reason. Beef cattle have a religion. They are deeply spiritual animals. They believe that good and obedient cattle go to a better place when they die through a magic door. They don't know what happens next, but they've heard that it involves really good eating and, for some reason, horseradish. Rogers had been quite looking forward to it. They were getting a bit creaky these days, and cows seemed to run faster than they had done when they were lads. They could just taste that heavenly horseradish. And instead they'd been herded into a crowded pen for a day, and then the gate had been opened, and there'd been animals everywhere, and this did not look like the promised lard. And someone was on their back. They'd tried to buck him off a few times. In Rogers's heyday, the impudent man would by now be a few stringy red stains on the ground. But finally, the arthritic bulls had given up until such time as they could find a handy tree on which to scrape him off. They just wished the wretched man would stop yelling. Vimes took a few steps after the bull and then turned.
"'Carrot, Angua, you two get down to Caddy's Tallow Works. Just keep an eye on it until we get there, understand? Spy out the place, but don't go in, understand? Right? Do not in any circumstances move in. Do I make myself clear? Just remain in the area, right?'
"'Yes, sir,' said Carrot.
"'Detritus, let's get Fred off that thing.'
The crowds were melting away ahead of the bull. A ton of pedigree bull does not experience traffic congestion, at least not for any length of time.
"'Can't you jump off, Fred?' Vimes yelled as he ran along behind.
"'I do not wish to give that a try, sir.
"'Well, can you steer it?
"'How, sir?
"'Take the bull by the horns, man!'
Colon tentatively reached out and took a horn in each hand. Rogers, the bulls, turned their head and nearly pulled him off.
"'He's a bit stronger than me, sir. "'Quite a lot stronger, actually, sir.'
"'I could shoot it through the head with my bow, Mr. Vimes,' said Detritus, flourishing his converted siege weapon. "'This is a crowded street, Sergeant. It might hit an innocent person, even in Ankh Norpork.'
"'Sorry, sir,' Detritus brightened. "'But if it did, we could always say they'd been guilty of something, sir.'
"'No, that... what's that chicken doing?'
A small black bantam cock raced up the street, ran between the bull's legs and skidded to a halt just in front of Rogers. A smaller figure jumped off its back, leapt up, caught hold of the ring through the bull's nose, swung up further until it was in the mass of curls on the bull's forehead, and then took a firm hold of a lock of hair in each tiny hand.
"'It looks like wee mad Arthur de Gnome, sir,' said Detritus. "'He trying to nut de bull.'
There was a noise like a slow woodpecker working on a particularly difficult tree, and it punctuated a litany of complaints from somewhere between the animal's eyes.
"'Take that, you big lump that you are!'
The bulls stopped. They tried to turn their heads so that one or other of the Rogerses could see what the hell it was that was hammering at their foreheads, and might as well have tried looking down their own ears. They staggered backwards. "'Fred,' Vimes whispered, "'you slip off its back.' While it's busy. With a panicky look, Sergeant Colan swung a leg over the bull's huge back and slid down to the ground. Vimes grabbed him and hustled him into a doorway. Then he hustled him out again. A doorway was far too confined a space in which to be anywhere near Fred Colan.
Why are you all covered in crap, Fred?
Well, sir, you know that creek you're up without a paddle? It started there and it got worse, sir.
Good grief! Worse than that? Permission to go and have a bath, sir?
No. But you could stand back a few more feet. What happened to your helmet?
Last time I saw it, it was on a sheep, sir. Sir, I was tied up and shoved in a cellar and heroically broke free, sir. And I was chased by one of them golems, sir.
Where was this?
Colan had hoped he wouldn't be asked that.
It was a place in the shambles, he said. It was foggy, so I,
Vimes grabbed Colan's wrists.
"'What's this?'
"'They tied me up with string, sir, but at great personal risk of life and limb. I—'
"'This doesn't look like string to me,' said Vimes.
"'No, sir?'
"'No. This looks like candle wick.'
Colan looked blank.
"'Is that a clue, sir?'
he said hopefully. There was a splatting noise as Vimes slapped him on the back.
"'Well done, Fred,' he said, wiping his hand on his trousers. "'It's certainly a corroboration.'
"'That's what I thought.' said Colan quickly. "'This is a corroboration, and I've got to get it to Commander Vimes as soon as possible, regardless of—'
"'Was that gnome nutting that bull, Fred?'
"'That's wee mad Arthur, sir. We owe him a dollar. He was of some help, sir.'
Rogers the bulls were on their knees, dazed and bewildered. It wasn't that wee mad Arthur was capable of delivering a killing blow, but he just didn't stop. After a while, the noise and the thumping got on people's nerves.
"'Should we help him?' said Vimes.
"'Looks like he's doing all right by himself, sir,' said Colan.
Wee Mad Arthur looked up and grinned.
$1, 8, he shouted. "'No Welsh in it'll come after yous. One of these buggers trod on me grandpa once.'
"'Was he hurt?'
"'He got one of his horns twisted right off.'
Vimes took Sergeant Colan firmly by the arm.
"'Come on, Fred, it's all hitting the street now.'
"'Right, sir, and most of it's splashing.'
"'I say, you there, you're a watchman, aren't you? Come over here.'
Vimes turned. A man had pushed his way through the crowds. On the whole, Colan reflected, it was just possible that the worst moment of his life hadn't happened yet. Vimes tended to react in a ballistic way to words like, "'I say, you there,' when uttered in a certain kind of neighing voice. The speaker had an aristocratic look about him, and the angry air of a man not accustomed to the rigours of life— who had just found one, happening to him. Vimes saluted smartly.
"'Yes, sir. I'm a watchman. Sir. Well, just you come along with me and arrest this thing. It's disturbing the workers.'
"'What thing, sir?'
"'A golem man walked into the factory as bold as you like and started painting on the damn walls.'
"'What factory, sir?'
"'You come with me, my man. I happen to be a very good friend of your commander, and I can't say I like your attitude.'
"'Sorry about that, sir,' said Vimes, with a cheerfulness that Sergeant Colan had come to dread.
There was a nondescript factory on the other side of the street. The man strode in.
"'He said, golem, sir,'
murmured Colan. Vimes had known Fred Colan a long time.
"'Yes, Fred, so it's vitally important for you to stay on guard out here.'
he said. The relief rose off Colan like steam.
"That's right, sir," he said.
The factory was full of sewing machines. People were sitting meekly in front of them. It was the sort of thing the guilds hated, but since the Guild of Seamstresses didn't take all that much interest in sewing, there was no one to object. Endless belts led up from each machine to pulleys on a long spindle near the roof, which in turn were driven by... Vimes's eyes followed it down the length of the workshop. A treadmill, now stationary and somewhat broken. A couple of golems were standing forlornly alongside it, looking lost. There was a hole in the wall quite close to it, and above it someone had written in red paint,
"Workers, no master but yourselves."
Vimes grinned.
"It smashed its way in, broke the treadmill, pulled my golems out, painted that stupid message on the wall, and stamped out again," said the man behind him.
"Yes, I see. A lot of people use oxen in their treadmills," said Vimes mildly.
"What's that got to do with it? Anyway, cattle can't keep going for 24 hours a day."
Vimes's gaze worked its way along the rows of workers. Their faces had that worried Cockbill Street look that you got when you were cursed with pride as well as poverty.
"No, indeed," he said. "Most of the clothing workshops are up at Knapp Hill, but the wages are cheaper down here, aren't they? People are jolly glad to get the work."
"Yes," said Vimes, looking at the faces again. "Glad."
At the far end of the factory, he noted the golems were trying to rebuild their treadmill.